Well, hello everyone.
Hello, hello.
Cool. Thank you very much for coming. Last day of build, Friday. Thank God it's Friday, right? It's been a while, it's been a long week. It's been a long week for us. We launched a new product yesterday, which was exciting. My name is Yohai Kiryani, and I'm a program manager on the Azure team, specifically working on Azure App Service. I've been with the program for 5 years now. Basically from the first day through all the progression, and here we are today. So thank you very much for coming. It's Friday, I know it's late, almost the last session. Again, thank you for sticking around. Appreciate it very much. And before we start, if you guys want to come forward, it'll be great. I got some vintage memorable over here. These are Microsoft Azure websites bowl with the right logo, but the wrong name. So some of you are smiling, so I guess you remember that. Cool. So today we're going to talk about how can we build a hyperscale web application on running on App Service. And the reason I want to have that session with you guys is basically over the course of the 5 years we've been working on the project, we've seen a lot of customers. Customers like you, and again, appreciate the fact that you guys are using the platform. By the way, how many are running apps on App Service? Okay, only a few? Half about? What? A third of the audience? Cool, so some of you might find this interesting. So over the course of the year, we've been working with a lot of customers and want to share some of that knowledge. And over the last 12, 18 months, we've seen a surge in what we call internally large apps. And large apps are anything that actually pushes many, many millions of requests in any given day. So with that in mind, what we want to do is actually go ahead and share some of these learnings. So what are we going to do? So we're going to talk about customers. We're going to see some marketing slides, unfortunately, to see some customers that are running on scale on Azure. Then what I want to talk is about scale option, where we at, just to make sure that everybody here are on the same page with respect to what are we going to cover. And then what I want to do is I'm going to talk about, for about 50 minutes, about practices for scaling, basically specifically on the back end for App Service. This talk will have a little bit of code, a little bit of Visual Studio, but it's not your traditional, hey, let me open Visual Studio, run some code, hello world, and stuff like that. It's a little bit deeper at different levels. But I still hope there are still some cool demos, and I still think you're going to enjoy this. This could well be a lesson learned from, so like lesson learned from this project or that project, but it will be presumptuous of me to assume that whatever we learn on one project can fit everybody, because it's not one size fit all kind of message. However, there is a small list of, how do you move here? There is a small list of items that we're going to cover, but don't worry, actually don't need to memorize it right here. We're actually going to cover it in depth a little bit later. So to begin with, actually, it's still acquiring, it says. To begin with, let's do a few customer example, only a few, handful. Basically, Real Madrid is a pretty big soccer club in Spain, right, I hope? A little blackout here. And they have 450 million fans, and they wanted to build an app to basically engage and work with the fan. So they came up to Azure, we worked with them together. They have their front ends, their API running on App Service, serving a mobile application basically for all the fans to be able to customize data and so forth. But the App Service is just the front end because they're being powered by Dynamics and Power BI and database and media and a bunch of other stuff. Again, driving a lot of traffic specifically around season, games. Jet is an e-commerce site trying to make some innovation around improving the e-commerce experiencing, optimizing shopping experience. And they're also using Azure. They're using web apps specifically to run their front ends because they have a pretty impressive system running at the back end, including VMs and SQL and storage and machine learning, notification hub, bunch of stuff. Pretty cool. Next is another like a NASCAR example. They built a web and mobile experience for their customer. And this is interesting because their traffic pattern is very spiky, right? Only when there are races, they're actually scaling up and they're getting hammered massively and there is media involved in that, the notification hub, and they push live results and live update to their customer all the time. So it's very interesting how they like spike and then go away. Again, using App Service as their front end for running up in their application. And the last example for this part is the Canadian broadcasting company, CBC, that created an application for the Canadian government for the last election that they have. And again, this was a pretty interesting one. It was a one-time event, obviously. The site is still there, but the spike was one-time event. When the poll closes, you can see here at the bottom, we had about 800,000 requests per second, which is quite a lot, and they pushed 3.6 billion over only a course of six hours. And it was interesting because they went to kind of the higher end of what we call in terms of scaling, and I can show you some of the techniques that we have used to actually support that for them in this case. So the common thread across all those solutions is they're all using App Service. They're all using App Service as their front end for the application. We like to view App Service as a platform that provides best-in-class platform as a service. It is fully managed, right? We take care of scaling for you. We take care of the OS, the patching, anything like all that, we actually take care of you. It provides superior DevOps, as like we like to call it, right? It's very easy to deploy. I don't know if you've seen, but you know, Git and all of the automation around that, and self-service, diagnostics, logs, there's a whole bunch of stuff in there. And it provides enterprise-grade SLA, is what we call it. High SLA, secure, everything that comes with the word enterprise associated with it. On top of that, we actually have several flavors or domain-specific features that we have for web, for mobile. We have EasyAuth, we have API, like API management, Core, Swagger, EasyTable. There is a bunch of stuff that we have provided on, as part of the platform. And we recently added functions. Yesterday we announced it, which is pretty cool. Event-driven compute, we'll see a little bit of that later. And on top, you can see a bunch of apps. I guess that the Real Madrid, for example, fall under the digital under the digital global presence as an example. Jet is e-commerce. I guess the, both the Daytona and the Canadian government could be called as custom app. But you get the idea, right? You can run any kind of flavors on top of that. But actually, the best part in having App Service is not just this slide or what you see here. It's the entire ecosystem, which is part of Azure. The green little thing, or the green, not little, or the green box at the top is App Service. It's what my team is working on. But the importance is that everything else around it, right? It's very uncommon to have an app, definitely of the example that I showed, that is only using App Service. Majority of the apps, and I guess you guys are familiar with it, are using a lot of many more services. Whether you use SQL is for data, or storage, or tables, or queues, whether you're using, you know, media services or CDN, traffic manager if you're going at the high scale on that part, maybe using machine learning or event hubs or anything like that. All of that falls together basically in terms of what we have to offer is coming with a solution. All right. So, scalability. When we talk about scalability, we talk about scalability as a system, right? Well, all of the examples or most of this session are going to be focused on App Service, but you have to remember there's a larger context. So the scalability is the ability of a system, which we like to call an app, to handle a growing amount of work, which we refer to as HTTP traffic, in a capable manner, which I basically say doesn't go boom, or its ability to grow. Basically, if you have an app, scalability means that it can grow as more traffic comes through it, right? Increasing traffic, user capacity, whatever means actually want to be able to grow. And scalability point is the point in which your application breaks. So if you build a web or a mobile app on the client side, breaking point or scalability issue usually show like slow, errors, timeouts, anything like that. If you're building just pure API, you would probably hit the same thing with latency or errors or anything like that. But the important aspect here is that the system is an app, and an app comprised of multiple building blocks. Often we get calls, like a customer calls and says, hey, you know what, your is not working as properly, and we are very angry and upset, and we're going to move. And I say, okay, buddy, can we maybe help you a little bit? Yeah, we did this and that and so forth. And often we find, for example, that, hey, you have a slow web app because your database is pegged, CPU is 100%, and you forgot to index one of your tables. But it always, usually always manifests on the front end with the first interaction point of the customer. Okay, so with that in context, the scaling option in which we can talk about and want to have an offer is basically what we call vertical scaling. Take an existing node, right, and scale it up. That's a very important aspect. Versus what we call horizontal scaling, where you basically take an increasing number of nodes, adding multiple of the same nodes. It's the size of them is important, but not really important. And we're going to mainly focus on what we call the horizontal scaling. OK, so the real agenda for what we're going to talk today, and I try to kind of gamify this part, is to have different level as we go through the proficiency and we go to the scale options and scale the ladder of scale. You can figure out 1 to 4, basically, but we have five levels here. So let us go. OK. So first, stateless, all the professional. Before we do that, let me just switch here just to show you what we're doing. Switch, 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 switch. OK. So I'm running a scale test as we speak. I see it just started 45 seconds ago. I started a little bit before the meeting, before the session. I'm going to run for 10 minutes with iteration, and I'm going to restart it again once this one is finished. But basically, it's going to hammer one of my applications. This application, to be specific. Ooh. Simple web app looks loads images when it's supposed to load the images. When it loads images, ooh. You can already see scale issues. All right, so while this is running, let's go back to the slides. Okay, so stateless app. What does stateless app mean? Stateless app means that you can scale horizontal, right? And with that in mind, scaling horizontal means that you don't need to have any kind of persistent session or anything, any kind of persistency that is related to your VM. You cannot assume that your user will hit the same VM all the time. That's what you mean it can run horizontally, right? And it has to be stateless. You can't have any kind of session in your VM. Not a state session, any like shopping cart, anything like that cannot happen, right? Furthermore, do not use file to maintain state. Specifically on app service, I mean, it's a general practice. It's not a good habit anyhow, but specifically on app service, which is a managed service, the disk behind is shared, okay? And when I'm saying, meaning a shared disk, what I want to show you exactly is this. Who's familiar with this view? Who is using this? You, hey, Bo, vintage. Who else wants vintage? Hero, I have plenty more, no worries. You'll get answers, you'll get chances. So this is basically our backend, or kind of, not really a backend, sorry, it's our Kudu project. It's extended management capabilities that we provide with every site. One of the things here is nice is to see the debug console, and on the debug console, I will show you later during the demo how to get to here. What you can see is your files, basically. So this is the folder structure of your application. I go to my, not site extension, sorry. I go to my site, dubroot, and here you see here is my app. Now, the nice thing about app service is that if you have multiple VMs, all of the VMs are basically seeing the same thing. See, ignore this. I actually prepared in advance a place for this. Ignore that. All the VMs are actually seeing this folder. So when people come and we talk to them, people still think VMs, right? Still think the same thing. Hey, I went to the portal. I scaled to 4 different instances, so my app runs on 4 different VMs. That is 100% true. However, when we ask them what else is happening on the system, oh, yeah, we're just running some files or we're running somewhere to, like, you know, app data or anything like that. So guess what? Everything you're going to write into your dubroot, everything you're going to write into your site is going to end up across all the VMs, right? A very common example would be people using Lucene as an example, right? Lucene is a very powerful and common search indexer. A lot of people are running Lucene when the applications start to maintain some state and index some stuff. And the problem that is a bunch of VMs comes in up and down at a random time, and that's going to mess up the indexer, because each VM is going to change indexing, going to write to disk, and think that it's common. So please don't use disk for any state. So with that in mind, these illustrations kind of tell the same. If you have anything within your app, just get rid of it. Like, move everything to the database, obviously. But files, disk, session, anything has to go. All right. So next vintage opportunity. Who is familiar with the ARR affinity cookie? Oh, a few of you. But you're all the way at the back. Now I have to like throw all the way? I'm going to try. All right. I'm good with that. Not bad. Who else? All right. I've got plenty more. There's a whole bag. All right, so the affinity cookie is something that is somewhat of a legacy, but it's there on by default. So you guys need to be aware of that and at least handle that. And because I'm already running low on time, let me just go to the demo, and that's it. Otherwise, we're not going to be able to get out of here at all. So here's an app that I have. It's my awesome web app. It's an app that we use to actually demonstrate a bunch of features that we have on the system. I mentioned a few of them in my talk, like EasyAuth to do authentication, sites, staging slot to do the swapping and deployment and continuous integration, all that goodies. But for now, what I want to show you is this, the homepage. Here is what I got as a machine name. Okay? All right. So let me go back to the Kudu and look at the environment. And on the environment variable, what you're going to see here is the machine name. And then you're going to see this instance ID. Okay, one more option. Who knows what is this instance ID? No vintage. All right. So I'm going to tell you what is this instance ID. If you're going to go here, hit the F12 button, you're going to see this, resources, cookies. So this number, 8DE45, I hope you can see it, is pretty much the same number as here. And this is the machine ID. So when the affinity cookie is on, which is by default, we return this to your request, every request. And the next time this site hits our front ends, we're going to look for that machine ID. We're going to route the traffic to the same VM. It's on by default. It's legacy. When we started building this a couple of years ago, this was a good practice, or not a good practice. So it was a very good compatibility story for us. So you actually want to remove that. So let's do this. Let's go ahead, delete. Hit the refresh, and it comes back again. Let's delete it. Very persistent. Go easy off, and it's here. So you see the idea, right? You can't really get rid of it that way. OK, so the right way to delete to get rid of this cookie is actually remove it from our APIs. So I'm going to show you another cool trick. Who is familiar with Resource Explorer? Anybody? Few, OK, you guys definitely get something. Balls. Hey. All right, sorry if I hit anybody. So Resource Explorer is basically Azure Resource Manager is the new API. It replaces what used to be called the RDFE. And the nice thing about Azure Resource Manager is basically its structure. It's nested, there's a hierarchy. There is hierarchy in the way that objects are being defined. So with that in mind, what we see here is basically all of my subscription. And for each subscription, you see all the resource group that I got. I really need to clean up. And within one of them, for example, you can go drill down all the way to this site. And this site, what you see here, is actually the site object. If you make this request properly authenticated, this is the nice thing about it. It actually can help you learn about the API. You can see my subscription ID. You can see the resource group, the name, the provider, the site, and so forth. If you make this call, you're going to get this object back. This object represents the object of the website, basically. You can see there are other options here, like information. For example, deployments. If I go to the deployment tab, you'll be able to see that I'm using deployment, I'm using Git. You can see the user that made the authentication, the actual ID of the commit and everything, my message that went through it, and so forth. So you can see there's a lot of rich information here. Another thing I want to show you is instances. Instances actually show you the instances that you have for your app within the app service. So guess what? Familiar with this name? Sorry, with this number? It's the same number. This is the instance ID. That's what gets back to you. Okay. So to get rid of that, we have to go back here and we have to fiddle a little bit with the API. But to do that, before that, let me just show you this. So this is my app, and if I want to go to scale out, right now I'm running only on a single box. So let me scale, hit the save button. Save successfully. Cool. So it takes a couple of seconds actually to run on more than one machine. So the system needs a little bit of a response time. But the important aspect is this RD, which is D52 attached to 8DE, sorry. I can refresh this forever and ever. I'm not going to get a new machine. Okay. However, if I go to my resource and let's try to refresh my site, this usually works. Do I get? Okay, let's see the instances. So I already have two instances. Okay, so at that point, if the system, if the database says that I already have two instances, and this is the second one, then basically I have two instances. However, I'm still stuck here on the same one. Now you may try, if you guys want to try, you can actually try and hit this. My awesome web app, Azure.net, AzureWebsites.net, and probably you're gonna get maybe a different instance. So let me go ahead. Nice thing about the ability of this site, of the resource manager, is I can hit the edit. And if you fiddle here too much and you screw up, then your site is hosed, so don't. But there is something called client affinity enabled, and it's true. By default, it's true. Let's set it to false. Hit the put. I'm updating my record. Good. Let's hit the get just for in case. And it is false. All right. So if I'm going to refresh this, guess what? It's still here. It's supposed to be here, okay? Because that's my client. But if I delete it, and if hopefully this also takes time to propagate, so we need to try it several times, but let's see. Let's hit a refresh. Still here. It could be also client. Still here. Let's do this. And it's not here. All right. So now when I'm going to refresh this, see? A different one. It depends, right? There's not a lot of load, so it depends how the load balancing is going to hit me. All right. Demo number one worked. OK, so we're back on this. So disable your error cookie. It's good for you. And enable always on. Always on is a setting on the app. You enable it. It's a good thing to enable always on. Who is enabling always on today, for example? Okay, some of you. That's good. No vintage for you. When you enable always on, if you have an app that actually gets hammered with traffic, always on is not really that matter because your site will be up basically most of the time because it gets handled traffic. The thing with what always on is that on the rare case that your app is not having traffic and for some reason we recycle your VM, you want always on to make sure that it's coming back alive. So keep always on. It's good for you. All right. Number two, experts. You know what experts do? Experts make sure that someone else is doing the job for them. That's what experts do. So level 1.5 is let someone else handle the load for you. And to be able to specifically show that, I need to refresh some of the stuff here. Oh, I'm not showing anything, sorry. Which is not loading for some reason. All right, so this is a pretty simple app that we have that load images. Ignore this. This is basically some CSS issues. As soon as I hit on one image, it loads. And basically what you see is just part of that image and so forth. So specifically what I'm talking about, let someone else handle the stress, is the following. Let me go back for a second. Hit the F12. I'm going to spend a lot of time with this view. This time, let's go and try and find an element. So any of those elements, each one that I touch, doesn't really matter. Each one that I touch, basically what you see here is that the actual image is coming from somewhere else, specifically coming from storage. this is it. You can see here's the URL. Let's copy it. Let's go here. Let's clean it up from the CSS mess. Note it's even HTTPS at that point. Here it is. Oops. Anyway, so this is one image, and it's coming from Blob. That's an important aspect. And it's super cool because it's coming from Blob and not coming from your own VM, right? Images doesn't flow through your system, go somewhere else, very important. It's very easy and very scalable at that point because now your client actually what is doing, what is happening. And let me show you the network for that. Clean it up, let's go to one of those images. What you see here is actually a bug in the client because we are asking the SUS token multiple times for whatever reason, doesn't matter. What happened here is we made a request to our API. This is our site, public website, Azure websites. This is an API call. We do a post on the image. This is the option basically we're looking for. Hey, give me the ID. Give me the ID of the, here's the ID of the image, give me the token. We are returning you a token, and with the token, with the token, basically we go ahead and make the ask for the blob, which is cool. Another important aspect of that is, if the demo works, is this. I can upload. I can do the same thing with an upload. Do you care if it's a ferry or it's the, do you care if it's for, if it's big or small? Anybody? No? It's just this little guy. Hit the open. Upload. Choose file. Doesn't matter. Open. Clean up. I'm going to do upload. And what you're going to see here is basically exactly the same thing. Let me try to, you guys can see. Cool. So we have made one request, and basically saying, hey, there is a new image coming. We're going to upload it to you. And then through the client, we actually upload this directly into Blob Store. So even the upload doesn't go to our, through our system, or through the app, basically. So it's the API handling, and the client is doing everything around that. It actually chunks everything and goes up all the way in the image, and then we do some little bit more code around that. Where is this? Here is this. Upload service. So what we got here is basically the following. We have a Azure Blob upload, which is an open source stuff that we found, which is pretty cool. Basically go ahead, chunks any blob that you have, any media, any object that you're going to upload as a blob, and just simply just handle all the traffic to upload it in chunks, which is pretty nice. The upload service at that point, it's a bunch of Angular that once you hit the upload, it actually gets a SUS URL, and it gets SUS URL, it's all the way up here. You can see it makes a post to our API with enough information, get the results returns to the user, and then I'm actually going to upload the blob with the token and everything else. So getting the files, reading the files, uploading the files, it's also being secured through the tokens, it's HTTPS, and the traffic doesn't go flow through our system, which is super important. Same thing happens with mobile as well, but already had half an hour, so let's actually move on. So that was storage, cache, and CDN we'll get to in a second. What we've seen is basically this. It's what we've seen in core right now, so go away. We make a request to our API. API returns us a SUS. Number two is generate a SUS token, talk to the storage SDK, but on the server side, not the client. Returns the SUS token to the app. The app actually then take, upload the blob, and do the same thing for downloading and uploading. Okay, so we handle that part. Next question, why CDN? And I think the most appropriate answer is why not. Who's using CDN? Oh, a lot. So I don't really need to spend too much time on this. Cool. CDN is actually really important to use. As you can see some of the data over here. Let me show you why. We go in the network. Let's close this. Did I hit refresh here? No, let's go ahead, clean this up, hit. So as you can see, script loading time. Ooh, you can't really see, sorry. Let's light up another one. So as you can see, I just refreshed. I can refresh it again. And I arrange by type so we can see like all the scripts. So all the JavaScript are the best example. These are the load time for each of the file. 200 takes several hundred milliseconds. Please note they're all doing in parallel, so the Angular is actually doing it in the right way. It takes less than a second, but you get the idea. These are being transferred directly from my app. Okay? If I go to here, should have done it in advance, and I hit the scripts, sorry, the type. So the scripts are weighted with 3 or 4, but look at the time difference, 50, 50, 40, 50, 40, versus 500, 600, an order of magnitude, right? I think that would be enough for this demo, right? Anymore? Now, you know what? Let me show you something else. It could be hard to set up a demo. You know, you need to set up a CDN. You need to go find a CDN, all that. It's not. Basically, if you go to Azure, I already have it set up. I can show you how easy it is to set it up. If you go to Azure, you can add yourself a CDN endpoint. Where's my CDN over here? This one. One of them. Can't remember which one. Yes, this one. Okay. So basically, it's that simple. You go ahead, you add a CDN, you choose, you can add a custom domain if you want, and you can go any custom domain, whatever you have. You add an endpoint. I add Traffic Manager because this is for the next later stage of my demos, and that's it. You're nothing else. Right, and if you want to add a custom domain, if you own it, add a custom domain, we verify it, this is it. And behind the scene, everything is happening for you. Nothing else needs to happen. So it's super simple, super easy to actually do it and run the app. All right, next. Okay, so we talked about resource optimization, letting someone else do the work for us with storage, true for any type of media. So we covered almost all the media in our application. Talked about CDN as well, makes sense. Cache is also a very good practice to use, specifically if you have a lot of state that you need to maintain somewhere. Cache is a pretty good place to keep it other than the database. Avoiding disk. App service is a managed environment. Within a managed environment that we manage all the VM for and stuff like that, there are certain limitations that you might want to consider. Remember, we're using surge storage, which means you could have 10 VMs. If you go to app service environment, you could have many more VMs. And if, for example, all your logs and traces will go through our file system path to the storage, it won't be that optimized. Okay? By default, when you enable logs and traces, everything goes to disk. So what I'm going to ask you guys to do is something very simple. Is when you go, I can't remember which one, but we'll figure it out. We will go to this way, where are we at? Diagnostic log. Application, only thing that they do at the application level, it's a .NET application, so any system.trace, anything like that, will be intercepted, and we're going to actually push it into a blob. And the same thing goes with my server logging. Everything goes to a blob. Okay, it actually is easier, someone is waving, I can't see. Sorry? Ah. Thank you, Nir. I switched the screen. Nobody else told me? All the balls back. At least you guys are awake. Okay. So, here we are at the app, and we went to the diagnostic log. And in the diagnostic log, you can see all the options that we have. We can have application logging to the file system. It's on, actually, it should be off. Oops. And then the application logging actually should go to the blob instead of the file system. Why? Just to kind of explain that. You can control the error level of the application logging, but that's a different conversation. This is a different demo. And web server logging, which is more important, is your Aurora HTTP, also push it into a blob. It's not really good to have it on disk. It's hard to get it out to begin with, but it's really bad to write it down, definitely if there is a lot of traffic. So I can save. Yeah, I can say, why not? Famous last word, right? Okay, so this actually ran fine, but for what I want to show you is I actually want to show you the blobs. So if I go, not this one, tables, queue, blob. So if I go to one of my containers, I already set it up. So it's here, and this is according to a month. So 2016, March, it will load 31st. You can see here every hour basically has a log. Let me go to 06. And you can see here's all the logs that I got. Pretty straightforward. All those little numbers that you already probably should identify, they represent the first few numbers of each of that first few numbers of the machine ID that we have show you with the affinity cookie, basically. That's how you know that you're running on multiple machines, and it's going to guarantee the uniqueness of each machine if we actually rotate your machine. So good practice to have. Please do that. OK, and the last part is connection pooling, thread pooling, and the up warm-up, which is not really let other people do the work for you, but kind of. So connection pooling is very important. It both goes with HTTP and database. Database connection pooling is kind of obvious, I assume everybody are using. HTTP is a little bit less. For .NET, a developer is basically being done for you without you even knowing. For other languages like Node or PHP, you actually need to take care of it. And why it's important, if you make any outbound network connection, HTTP requests to any other API, right? The database, it calls also count, but I guess database are kind of managed on the connection for database, sorry. If you make any request, then it goes out, any outbound request goes to ephemeral ports. Those ports on a managed system, specifically on app service for the public, not app service environment, those are expensive ports. And there is a fine limit to what you can get with them. So if you don't have connection pooling and you're making a lot of requests, like thousands of them, you're going to hit a limit, and that's going to basically not make any more requests, not honor your request for you. Most people are not aware of that, and at that point, the app kind of doesn't work. So with that in mind, be able to use connection pooling is very important. So let me see if I can find the code for this. OK, so I'm not going to show you the database connection pooling because it's built in because I'm using EF. But other than that, there is Service Point Manager, which changed the default connection limit. This is for outbound HTTP. So this is for the big prize. I hope Nir is OK with this. We're going to give away a shirt. Azure Functions, new shirt. It's going to be vintage at some point. Not today. With our new logo, UpService. So for the shirt, two questions. What is the default value of the Service Point Manager default connection limit for client and for server? Four? No, four is before, but not now. Yes? Anybody? Sorry? No. So for, sorry? Wait, who said two? Who said 10? 10 for which one, client or server?
Server.
And for client? OK, but both of you said it at the same time, so I have to fight for the shirt after the event. Sorry. No, we'll figure it out. But you can. You want a ball? I can give you a ball for now. You already have one, right? All right. We'll figure it out. Don't worry, guys. I'll give you my shirt if you want. Not this one, the other one. OK, divide and conquer. Also very important. Actually, probably not the most important, but as important if you want to actually really achieve high scale at some point. So separation of concern, divide and conquer. Some people might call it microservices architecture, but we're not allowed to say microservice architecture in this conversation. So I call it just break your app to the smallest manageable logical components that you can scale each one individually. Okay. So for the example that we're using, I got an API as a front end. I got my website. I got my image resizing that happens at the back end. And I got my client's code, my client's application that are running here. If you're building a mobile app that uses API, so your mobile app uses the API, communicates with your server back and forth, get data, and render it on the device. As you've seen, we're trying to follow pretty much the same pattern with Angular or any other client technology that you want on the website as well, right? So basically, your browser acts as like kind of a mobile client. You just go ahead and makes an API request and then renders whatever needs to render. Doesn't really render CSS, HTML, or anything like that. It's not that we don't have those pages within the app. Mostly, it's being Angular running behind the scene. And it's very important to be able to achieve that level of control. So if we go here, what you see here basically is I got my my API app. Ignore the common model, just the idea that we use. We got my resize web job. And my resize web job, basically, it's a console application. It's a web job. Who's using web jobs today? Over there. Ugh. Sorry. Someone here? Bad aiming. As I said, I have more. So basically, it's a console application. This does all the magic for you, but we can't deploy a console application in a nice manner. So what I did here is basically there is a small wrapper as a web application that actually can be deployed with ARM as a full package, the entire thing. So it's pretty cool on that. And then I got my APIs over here. We saw some of them. Like here's the image storage controller to get the SAS token. We've covered some of that and so forth. This is the app application part. As you see, there's a bunch of JavaScript, and there's not a lot of model. It's not really a standard MVC application. So with that, we can actually deploy each one into individual parts. So the next, this is where the slide gets tricky. So the next part of that is basically, hey, if you are doing that, then consider deploying every single component into a different app hosting plan, which will give you the ability, basically, to scale each one independently. It depends on the load and the characteristic of your application, right? Because my API needs to be snappy, has to be React very fast, as low as latency as I can get. And then everything else beyond that is kind of async operation, whether it's image processing, whether it's order processing, whatever you want to call that. That can handle somewhere else. And depends on the load, you can decide how you want to scale each one of those independently. So if I go here, in my hyperscale demo resource group, if I look at all my resources, you see I have several applications. I got Contoso Web. Is it OK with the fonts? Yeah, I got Contoso Web. I can zoom in a little bit. I got Contoso Web, which basically goes to our app service environment, the hyper P there. We'll get it in a second. Here it is. And I got another one, which is the public, which goes to a different stamp. It's a different deployment. It's the same app. They're both using the same database. They are both deploying the same region. This one goes into basically Bay 51, which is west. All right. The thing is that each one of those is deploying to a different environment, as I said. But specifically for API and web, so my web part of my public probably goes into Contoso Moments plan, which runs right now on the standard four larges. You can see four larges over here. And if I go out and I can scale it out, it can do whatever I want with that at any given time. It's pretty cool. All right, auto scale setup and so forth. So with that, if I look at my other part of my public stem deployment, I also have a web job, and my public Contoso web job, which again, just that one web job, is deployed into a different hosting plan. And this hosting plan has only one small basic, because what I'm guessing or what I'm assuming here is that most of my applications will do reads. The front end needs to be very strong, and there will only be very few upload of images. Therefore, I don't need any beefy strong machine on the back end to actually process a lot of stuff. All right. So with that, so the next step is basically to run the thing serverless with Azure Functions. So we announced Azure Functions yesterday during the keynote, yay. And Azure Functions basically is an event-driven compute. It allows you to run small pieces of code depending on events that happens. Whether you, in our case, we're going to upload an image to a blob, something happens with your app, you want to have a webhook, any other application or anything else we offer in terms of triggers with respect to functions. I'm not going to show a lot of that. I'm going to show very little, in fact. but just enough to get the idea of what we can do. And there is a small surprise. So let's go to my func. So this is the experience for Azure Function. Oh, again. This is the experience to Azure Functions, because it doesn't change here. It's really annoying. So I already have an Azure Function app, which hosts basically a bunch of functions for me. The one function that I want to show you is actually the image image resize. So I'm going to write or explain too much of this. I'm going to go through quickly to what we see here. So I can import parts of stuff, import several assemblies into my application. There is a way to do it, so we can do it automatically when you deploy your functions. And I haven't shown you what the web job actually is or what it's doing, but basically the web job that resizes the images is pretty much identical to the code that you see here, just even trimmer, even less code in that part. So this is just enum for the size. This is a dictionary that represents the size. Other than that, what we do is here, and it's very nice. We got a function that runs every time that something appears on the stream as an input, which is the blob. So I'm going to show you the trigger. Every time we upload an image to the blob, this function is going to run. Capture the input as a stream and then write it out to blob output small and to blob output medium. And basically what we do here is those are the two lines of code that actually go ahead and build and run the image builder and pass those stream as parameters that we're going to write the updated image to it. And if I look at integrate, where the magic happens, is the trigger is being defined as an input from Azure Storage. And you can see here the storage account information. And we're looking for input images as the container. And there is a generic parameter name that actually will follow through. And then I can define additional input binding, which I'm not doing for this function. For the output, what I have is the blobbed out small and the blobbed out medium in this case. And the same storage account, this is the parameter that actually we're going to work with in the function. This is how the magic of the binding happen on the functions for you. So you don't really know. If you write the function, you don't care and know how to work with storage at all in this case. You just get the object, manipulate it, and work it out. And we're going to just write it into a different container with the same name. So after that, let's see if this thing is actually going to work. So here is here's my storage account. This is Storage Explorer. I already have an input, an image on the input, and on the small and on the medium. So let's actually go ahead and delete them all, so you can believe me. OK, so those are empty. OK, so let's upload one. Let's go with the Bumbies, this one. And let me show you. Let's clear, see the log. Let's clear the log so we can actually see it happening. I'll hit the open. Image is up. And the func was started and actually completed. And if I go now to the other containers, as you can see, the image is here. You can look at the image. Image view. Here's the image. All right. This is where we applause. Okay, sorry. Anyway, those are different images. You can see the size is, the medium size is 184K and the small one is 114. So it's actually different in them. OK, so this was one aspect. There is more. I'll just show once I get this slide. So this is how our app looks like now. I have a very thin layer of API logic that happens. I got my that handle the web client, the mobile client. I got my web app, which is just basically a container for all the API that I have, all the logic that I have in JavaScript, and that's about that. It runs in an app service environment, but we'll see it in a second. I have the queue, the storage, sorry, I have this queue and the storage with the function, but that's just one aspect. So another thing I want to show you is I have another function called webhook. And my webhook is doing something very, very, very simple. Basically, every time that someone, it's an HTTP trigger. So every time, I got another function over here, webhook. And it's an HTTP-triggered function. So HTTP request comes in. And what I'm doing here is, other than returning an HTTP response, I'm writing the parameter, the message that comes in, to an Azure storage. And same thing, I got a work name, I need to have partition and row key and so forth. So I get the object. Again, ignore the coding part about this. I get the object. I do some testing, which are actually commented out. I create an object here to want to write to the item. And then I just go ahead and edit to my table. And that's it. And it's nice because I can actually go into my code. And you can see here that I'm actually using table logger to log the message. So here is the table logger logging the message. And I actually go ahead and put the information with the image ID and the album ID and the user ID into it. And to show that this thing actually works, let me clear this. Let me hit refresh. Remember, every time we ask for a SAS token, we're actually going to get this. So this should actually show it multiple times, as you can see. So this is, you can see different image ID every time. Hit the pose, all the images that came through. This is how easy it is to work. And this goes directly into table store. So now I have a very nice, easy logger to have within my application. Well, this is cool. Let me show you something that we are working with a partner. Right. So this is really, really in development. We're working with Splunk to enable Splunk as an output binding. So me writing into table store, it's nice, but it's kind of a poor man's solution. It's working. If you want to get to a very high scale and you want to be able to collect information, run analytics, and all kind of stuff on that, you can use Azure App Insights. You can also use Splunk. And we're working with Glenn Block. Glenn, if you're seeing this recording, thank you very much. He actually went in, and because Azure Function is completely open sourced and all that, he basically went in and within about 20 hours of work took and created a Splunk binding to a function. So basically, if I go here, and this is going to see it in Kudu and not in the function portal because we haven't tied the hooks right now. But you can see here is a Splunk collector. If I go in, this is the function definition. So these are the triggers and bindings. So you see there's a timer trigger here. And this is an output binding for a Splunk event collector. Just to make sure that you believe me, this view, I can show it to you in the function as well. If I go into the integrate, there is an advanced editor which just show you the binding. So say this is my binding. So it's pretty much the same format, same binding. So there is a Splunk event collector. And the nice thing about it, once you have that and you add it to your binding, it's a cool thing about function being open source and all that, this is the code. I got a timer. You can imagine have any input, new Splunk event, which is an out object, as you can see here, and that's it, and it's done. Right now it's showing bar demo. Let me remove the bar. That's it. Hit the save button. It will recompile. Magic will happen behind the scene. And that's all. So now I can actually go into my Splunk, and this is a Splunk deployment on Azure. It's being deployed. I deployed it using the new Splunk ARM template that they have in the store. You can deploy it, and you have Splunk. And there's HTTP collector here. You get some token. Using this token, you can pass it into information to your Splunk. And at that point, basically, I can go ahead and do some stuff if I would know how to use Splunk. I don't, sorry. I use for everything. And this is all the information. You can see full bar. You can see full bar demo, right? It's all the timer actually go ahead. And already the message is there. And every minute, you'll be able to see more and more messages. OK. So this is a little bit of the power of function and the serverless aspect of that. And obviously, my API pushes a lot of requests to the function that's doing the HTTP. We will be able to scale it up, which actually basically meaning the same scale as this guy, if you think about it. But it's happened behind the scene as a magic, so it's pretty cool. OK, I got two more levels in 5 minutes. That's going to be tricky. So app service environment. Who is using app service environment today? All the way up there? Quarterback, I'm not going to be. OK, so app service environment is an isolated environment from app service, right? If you run in, and the easiest way to do it is actually to do the following. It's going to be really quick because we don't have too much time. So this is one app that I have. This is running on the public aspect of app service. Sorry? OK, so you can see here, this is my app. This is my, this is the Alice, sorry. This is the CNN that I'm using, Azure Websites, and it goes to Bay 51, one example. If I go to my other one, which is this guy, then you see it's going to a different one. It's also in West, in Bay, but you can see this little GUID here. And basically what we've done here is app service environment is your own dedicated, isolated environment. So it's like the public Azure website offering in terms of the functionality and capability of the website. Everything is kind of the same. The only difference is we actually deploy in your own virtual private, in virtual network. This is your own dedicated environment. You control your fate end to end. Anything that you do there, it's up to you. So if you go, to app service environment, what you'll see is, and there's all the demos, by the way, that we've been doing right now, have been doing, some of it ran with some stress on it. What you can see is that you own the entire infrastructure in terms of the deploy, in terms of the VM. So here is the front end. You actually control your front ends, how many front ends are in there. As you can see, this is a little bit of the scaling test, the load test that I've been pushing using Visual Studio. You own, so basically, for example, I'm running on P3s right now and have four instances for my front ends because that's where the front ends for your stamp. And you can see I can scale a lot if I choose to. I'm not going to do it, but you can. And the same way you can control the front end, you can control your worker pools. Worker pools are just a set of VMs, imagine physical VMs, like real VMs, from which you can carve logical representation of your app services. So over here, I have 10 of them that I have on my set. Two are being used, and seven are actually available. Only nine, because we keep one as a buffer. When with that, and then you have a service plan, app service plan, right? The same one that we've talked with the different API and web jobs. And the service plan has, again, the same capabilities. And you can auto-scale the service plan. But scaling the service plan within a worker pool will be limited to the number of VM available on the worker pool. And it's only up to 9, remember. 10 is the number. We can only use 9. OK, the important aspect of this, and this is going to chat a little bit about that. The important of this is basically, if you want to have a very massive scale, like really, like tens of thousands of RPS, requests per second, you have to go with app service environment. Because on the public app service, our front ends are basically shared. I can give you 10 dedicated instances on app service environment, and even 20 with premium. But the front ends are being shared by everybody else within that unit of scale, that Bay 51, that IP, which is different. And therefore, if you're pushing too much, you might saturate the traffic and first harm other people, and other people can harm you as well. So therefore, if you want to have a massive scale, you really want to go into app service environment because of the scaling issues that you might have on that. OK. So guidelines for app service environment scenario. Determine your front end sizes early, as I showed you. You can scale up. Adding machine is not that expensive. It takes about 20 minutes to add the pool. I'm talking about the pool. Increasing the pool takes about 20 minutes because we're adding like physical VM to the pool, cloud service basically. But if you want to change the size of that, the change of size will actually mean we need to go through the entire pool. So if you have, let's say, 10 VMs and you change from P3 to P4, we have to actually rotate all 10 of them, which is expensive in time. OK, test early, test often, and test for load. And I cannot stress the importance of that aspect. We had two cases this week, internal Microsoft, so I can talk to them about them a little bit. One team came to us on Monday, says, hey, our build is coming, duh. Can you help us test the site? We have some issues with our performance, Monday. Okay? Yeah, sure, why not? Nobody was there, I really were flying already. And then yesterday, during the keynote yesterday, I believe that someone, Scott, announced there are some certain mobile development tools are free. But while they are free, you still need to get a license key. And the site was running on us, and guess what? Right? And they didn't even, yes. So you get the idea, and the problem eventually wasn't on our, it was the code itself. So long story short is, test early. Please, our servicing team will be very happy. I'll buy you personally a beer. Okay, and test often, test all the time, before and after, not 2 days before launch. All right, if you want to talk about strategies about scaling and testing, the best way to do it is basically set up small, two front ends, two worker, and break your system. Find that scalability point that we've talked about early on the first slide. Break the system, this is your multiplier, how you're going to add up. And then scale up with ACE for performance testing and so forth. Let's see, we're out of time, so let's actually go fast. So, last level, geo-distributed. More is better, nothing else we can say. Sometimes even you need to go scale beyond the sizes of up-service environment. We had cases like that. Good thing, up-service environment gives you the undedicated IP, so traffic manager at that point, you can do whatever you want. And again, it's super easy to actually go ahead and make those changes. This is my traffic manager, and you can just add more and more endpoints, assuming traffic manager would load, or not. See, I overtime, so traffic manager knows that. Anyway, it's very easy to load endpoints, thank you, and simply just add more endpoints. It can be, it can be external, it can be Azure endpoint, you can go with up service. And you can choose anyone you want, any endpoint you want. So it's very easy to set up, and it's working because most of my demos were doing through one of those. The thing is with that is that your app now needs to be on the same page. So with App Service Environment, for example, you can actually host two different applications in the same region, which is a little bit tricky with not using App Service Environment. In this case, I'm using the same database and the same storage. It's easy. When you go and try to do it with a different region, it gets a little bit trickier because then you need to figure out your application. Read, writes, you know, fail, active, active, passive, all kind of that. So there's a lot of work to be around. But basically, the setup that we've seen today is a CDN, traffic manager, an app service environment, a regular app in the public app service, both using the same database, basically, with the function around that, and that's it. And this can scale like a lot. I'm trying to break the system with the tools that I have. I failed. I was even scaled too much on that. Okay, and with that, since I'm kind of over time, this will be the last slide. Things to remember, stateless. Keep your app stateless, please, please. It's the one thing that you probably have to do if you want to scale. Resource optimization guidance was the part that lets someone else do the work for you, right? Use other tools, use other services, figure out how you can offload work from your system. Test, always test for load and perf, specifically if you know that the stuff is happening or going to happen. App service environment supports hyperscale. Some of the customer that we've seen early on, the customer example state for that. And basically what I'm saying is, hey, everything I showed, talked to you about here is pretty, it's out there and it's running on app service. Let's you basically focus on your app and forget all the underlying infrastructure because I haven't shown any specific tricks here, but it's just an app that runs. And if you keep those few simple rules, then we will do the rest of the work for you. My team will take care of the scaling for you and that part. And with that, what next? Try Azure Function, you've seen some of it. You can go to try Azure Function, functionazure.com to try it. Try App Service if you're not using App Service. I saw a few hands of people that did not raise their hand when I asked who's using. If you want to contact me, this is my contact information. I am the last session of almost today, so thank you for coming on Friday. And please give us your feedback. We live and die by the evils of the session. Thank you. Oh, balls. These are balls, few more balls and stickers, if anybody wants balls and stickers. Yeah, sure.